Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Sans Pants Radio. What are we?
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to another episode of Movie Maintenance, where some films just need fixing. I'm Gabe.
I'm Handsome Tom.
I'm Carney.
And today we're looking at Pirates of the Caribbean 5, Dead Men Tell No Tales.
Otherwise known as Johnny Depp Does No Lines, gets it fit into an earpiece and is a piece of shit for 2.5 hours.
Guys, think of this masterpiece.
Loved it.
I think I would rather watch videos of Barnaby Joyce talking about executing Johnny Depp's dogs again. Than actually reference. Watching.
Oh, I'm getting political.
Love the politics.
Listen, champ, pump the brakes a minute and let's just talk about the film for what it is.
Okay,
which is a piece of
film,
shit.
The film is a piece of garbage. It's the worst thing I've had to put my eyes on. I probably, if I had the option, I would watch Suicide Squad again before I'd subject myself to the level of torture that I endured watching Pirates 5. It is so bad.
What didn't you like about it?
Fucking everything. Do you know what I hated? I hated the fact that they invented, the whole point of the thing was, let's just find a device that just removes every possible curse ever. So basically retcons. Everything that's happened before these films. The hate of the fact that Johnny Depp was phoning it in, probably because he was having the lines phoned into his earpiece, as we later learned.
He actually phoned it in.
He literally phoned it in.
Got paid $20 million too.
Jeffrey Rush's character made no sense. It's just the father reveal was just bullshitting under. Like, wasn't done properly at all.
What am I to you? Treasure.
But
see,
that was okay.
See.
No, I hated that.
No.
That
it's
bullshit.
Really frustrating because the writing of that, like, in that little moment, I actually don't mind. However, they do nothing to earn
it. Don't do anything.
In the lead up to it.
Captain Salazar is an abhorrent villain that you can't under... The whole film, the whole... Okay, okay. You know what Pirates 5 has done? Mm. You know how we talk about when a franchise goes completely ridiculous, they jump the shark?
Yes.
Pirates 5 has gone so ridiculous, the shark has jumped it.
Yep.
And in the fucking film itself, yep. a shark that is undead jumps over okay. Johnny
that, that's
Depp.
That's it, that's it. That... I didn't use that in my pitch, but that was the bit of the film I probably enjoyed the most, the zombie sharks. I thought that was fucking awesome until Johnny Depp used it to pull him to shore.
Yes.
I thought the zombie sharks are something we've never seen before. I thought the effects were cool. I thought they were really creepy. It was the only moment in the film where I felt even the tiniest modicum of tension.
Do you know what I loved?
Then it just went ridiculous. Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I loved? Once again, we had Johnny Depp and crew being chased by a crew of dead fucking again. Pirates. Again. That's five fucking movies.
Have they done it in all five?
I feel like
not
it.
Not the fourth one, I don't
Oh, the fourth one was the fucking... Blackbeard was supposed to be immortal. It was magic.
See, it's bullshit. The whole thing's bullshit.
Well, see, I don't mind. I don't mind the absurd Pirates magic universe, right? Mm. I don't mind that. What I mind is just... They literally invented something that fixes every problem in the possible next movies ever. Like they just fully went, they just so, fucked up so bad.
Gabe and I were,
Orlando Bloom turns up and is shit.
No. He's the one okay thing.
No, but he's not good. Because okay. I thought the idea
he's
was
fine.
That because he was actually going to be doing what Davy Jones was supposed to be doing, which was ferrying the dead
yep.
to the realm of the dead, he wouldn't suffer from the weird curse. Therefore, he wouldn't get barnacle-y. He would just look like Orlando Bloom forever. No, we forgot that plot point. He's now barnacle-y.
He's got a light barnacle on his face.
Yeah, he shouldn't have any fucking barnacles
well,
on his face.
I don't know how the logic works. I don't think the filmmakers do either.
No one knows. The films are dumb.
Gabe and I were rewatching number two last night. We intended to watch two and three.
And did you enjoy them?
50 minutes into number two and went, holy shit, we need to stop. And then we decided to keep going. But we didn't watch three because we couldn't. Two is fucking terrible.
It's
absolute garbage.
Like, we spoke about this because I wasn't going to see Pirates 5. We sort of spoke about it and we had a friend who was going to give us free tickets. And it was like, sweet, that way we're not putting money in Johnny Depp's pocket. But
he's already been paid.
I was surprised by how much nostalgia I still had for the original films. Like, I mean, the first one I remember seeing on
first
a plane.
One's fucking to,
well,
great.
I watched it.
It is.
Because I remember when it came out,
terrific.
My parents didn't let me see it. And then the end of that year, 2003, I was going to Austria with my auntie, and I was in the plane, and Pirates of the Caribbean was on the in-flight entertainment thing. And I watched it 8 times over the flight there and the flight back, over and over again, because I just loved it so much.
That's a good flight.
And then, like, the second one, the third one, when
I
they came
I saw
out,
it three
I was,
times
like,
in the movies.
Mm.
I hated the second and third one later, but at the time of seeing them, I was like...
They're fine.
They're entertaining.
They're fine. But like one thing, and I think we spoke about this in an AGM maybe, that I think is really interesting in the case of the fifth one, is that two and three, for all their flaws, which are legion, actually kind of have some sense of originality or invention to them.
Yeah.
Even when it's going like completely gonzo, like the witch who turns into a goddess, who turns into crabs.
Crabs turns into
I thought
water.
Was fucking stupid at the time. However... Looking at Pirates 5, which is so bland, it retrospectively does make 2 and 3 look better. Not good, because watching 2 last night really brought home how shit it is, but
it just 5 just baffles me in that it's like they just forget everything they've done. It's like all of a sudden the compass is really important, but they don't actually explain why the compass is important at all, except that it showed him how to kill... Sells.
You were saying this last night. Was it your thing about all the items that they originally brought up, which were just...
Well, okay, I think particularly the first three films are an exercise in retroactively trying to make it all seem planned. Because I remember when the first one came out, reading an article in Empire magazine where they were talking about the second one. They were like, oh, there are two directions we can go. It can either be like the Indiana Jones franchise where it's all Captain Jack Sparrow going on different adventures, or the Star Wars one where it all turns out to be this big epic saga. And they went for the latter. And so in the process,
they didn't
it's like,
do it well.
No, they didn't do it well. But then, so get this: they went for the ladder, and then they're like, "Oh, things like Pintel's eye and the compass and this and this and this are all going to be like mega important plot points." But then at the same time, like references to like Jack Sparrow being in Singapore in the first film and his running with the East India Trading Company are all going to become plot points as well, instead of just like little character details, which is what they were meant to be.
Yeah.
And then when they fucked that up in 2 and 3, they were like, "Oh shit, okay, let's have our cake and eat it too." Now we'll make a fourth one that goes the Indiana Jones route, where it's a standalone film with Jack Sparrow having an adventure, and it sucks because. Because as you've said so many, hit the mic in my rage. As you've said so many times, Tom, Jack Sparrow's like the Hannibal Lecter of the series. He's there to...
Elizabeth Swann is your protagonist of this franchise. Yep, yep, she should be the protagonist of film 5. It should be about her trying to fill Will. I get, Free Will.
Phil Will.
I get the son.
How do you cool. feel Will?
Pretty sure Will filled her pretty good at the end of the third film, mate.
Phil Will's like the really shit version. It's savvy. A porno version of Kill Bill. Phil Will. Volume 1 and Volume 2.
What annoys me is that, one, Johnny Depp got paid $20 million to just be a drunk fuckhead.
Also, like, taking...
In life and in the film.
Let's take out of the picture for a second our personal feelings on Johnny Depp, because, I mean, you know, he's...
But he phones it in. He does.
It's a shit performance. And on top of that, it actually takes away everything that made Jack Sparrow a good character.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, Jack Sparrow was bumbling and all of that in the first film, but he's
always had a plan.
That's it. He always had a plan. He was always smart. There was charm to him. There's a moment like in the second film, one bit I actually do quite like is when Elizabeth kisses him and then chains him to the mast to leave him for the Kraken. And then he just kind of looks at her and he's not scared. He just goes, pirate, with this smile. Yeah. And then when the Kraken comes, he's got that moment where he's like, hello, beast, and kind of faces it. If that was Captain Jack Sparrow in the fifth film, he'd just squeal and run away.
Yeah.
Or do something dumb.
Yeah.
Whereas like, what made Jack Sparrow work is that, yeah, he was, and what made him actually a complex character.
He had a moral code.
He was bumbling on the surface, but he had a moral code, and he would come through when it mattered. Like, he'd have these badass moments, like, you know, when the ship's being ripped apart and he's sailing off, and he comes, which doesn't make sense, because as you said last night, Carney, it's like then he's suddenly really sad to leave the Pearl in the second film when
it's a bit stupid.
He previously fucked off. You get the cool moment where he comes back and everything, and it's like, yeah, fine, it works. And then you get little nice grace notes, like in the third film when the Kraken's washed up, and Jack kind of has that moment of, like, looking at the Kraken being like,
you and I are from a past.
Yeah, and then when Barbossa's like, the world's getting smaller, Jack, and Jack's like, it's not getting smaller, there's just less in it. There's a really nice little moment of being like, all those things are what made him complex, and not overly complex, but an interesting character. In the fifth film, all of that's taken away in lieu of just him being drunk and bumbling and a jerk. And then there's one bit, you know, like when Henry Turner meets him in the prison cell for the first time, and he goes, I am Jack Sparrow, and he gives what I think is meant to be a charming smile, but it's one scene where the camera's close enough to his face that you kind of see past all the makeup and hair, and you just realize it's just a bloated 50-year-old man trying to look appealing and cool and sexy.
With dead eyes.
Do you know what?
Just, ugh, it's just
yuck. Do you know what is it's the film's biggest travesty?
Mm. Yeah.
Paul fucking McCartney.
What?
No. Why is he in there?
Why was Keith Richards in the first three?
No. Keith Richards in the third film actually kind of makes sense. He's the pirate king. He holds the court. They've got to go to him to have an accord to see who's going to lead. It makes sense. Paul McCartney in the prison is just like, oh, Paul McCartney's in the
prison. It's a fun cameo.
I didn't mind it. I actually enjoyed it probably more than most of the rest of the film.
We'll say, best sequence in the whole film is the sequence where she's being hung and he's being guillotined. That to me seemed like the old school pirate swashbuckle absurdity, and then it just went stupid from there.
You know the scene where it's a flashback to Jack beating Salazar?
And he looks real bad.
I have an issue with that, and maybe they cleared this up in the earlier films or whatever, but I always thought that Jack was this, you know, in his past was this kind of capable pirate who was clever and switched on, and then when they marooned him, he kind of went fucking nutty on the island. That was my take on the character, but this just shows him as he's just always been fucking crazy.
But he's not even the same as he was in the first film. He's still in that flashback, kind of bumbling, kind of goofy, and even when he's enacting a plan, there's nothing cool or smart or focused or intent about
it. That's it.
He's just goofing around.
They're playing like
dumb
slapstick humor that doesn't work.
And also, like, okay, there is that one bit in the film where, like, and I feel like the film sort of occasionally faints towards this idea of having like a washed up Jack Sparrow. I mean, yeah, it's like it's 20 years later. It makes sense. But it actually does nothing with it. Like, there's bits where he's like, they say, I'm washed up. I haven't had a wash in years. Hilarious joke, pirates. But, like, they don't actually do anything with that idea. And the idea of having a Jack Sparrow who's, like, past his prime, who's washed up, who's losing it, who's kind of everything's falling apart around him, that's interesting. But the film does nothing with it. And there's no arc of him going from being, like, this bumbling fuckwit to, you know, kind of regaining a bit of that kind of swashbuckling Jack Sparrow swagger he used to have.
Yeah.
There's none of that in it. He just stays a bumbling fuckwit all the way through. He shows no interest to Henry Turner, despite being the son of, like, probably the closest he's had to good friends.
Yep.
And then, like, at the end of the film, like, when Will and Elizabeth get reunited, he sits on the boat and he kind of, like, is watching them. He goes, oh, that's disgusting. And it's like...
There needs to be the moment where he says, that's disgusting, and then he turns away and then he smiles.
No, that's disgusting. He's looking, he's smiling, and someone catches him. He goes, oh, that's... Isn't that just...
Yeah. You know what I mean?
That'd be great. Like, That'd be great. Like, and then even at the start where Henry Turner's like, oh, I'm the son of Will and Elizabeth, you have a moment of Jack being like, fuck, look at you. You look exactly like Will Turner. Huh. 20 years have passed. Fuck, I've gotten old.
Yep.
Look at you. My like, old right-hand man now has this son who looks exactly like him, and I haven't changed. Like, there's so much you could do with that, but they do nothing with it. And all he makes some dumb joke, like, oh, does your mother still talk about me? It's like, have some emotional reaction, Jack. Like, you know, and that's the weird thing.
Even if it was like something bad, so he's like, I'm the son of Will Turner, and Jack just punched him.
Yeah, or just like something.
Because the thing is that you got to remember, Jack's goal across all three films, it seemed, was to live forever, right? He didn't want to age, right? So if you have a film in which he's aged, it means he's failed.
Yeah, absolutely.
Tap into that. But the reason he failed is because he chose to give Will...
To save Will Turner, absolutely.
Life. Yeah.
And the thing about it is, like, this film is so... I think the biggest failing of the film, and there are a lot of failings in the film, is that it's kind of a servant to two masters, where on the one hand, it's trying to be... Because, you know, in some of the marketing, it was like, oh, the final chapter of Pirates of the Caribbean. So in some ways, it's trying to resolve leftover threads from the first three films.
In Still other a sting ways, in the credits.
Then there's a sting in the credits. In other ways, it's trying to reboot this franchise, being like, oh, here's a younger, sexier version of Orlando Bloom and Keira Knightley. Here's this. And, oh, yeah, we're not really going to overly reference the original films too much, which is why I think they have Jack Sparrow not having being too emotionally attached to that. But then at the same time, they have... references you'd only understand if you'd seen the first three films.
Yeah.
And it's just this weird mismatch of like, is it a reboot? Is it a franchise capper? Is it what is it meant to be? I don't know.
It's a money-making tool and it's bad.
And it's not a good one.
No.
It's an incredibly expensive film too. I think it's one of the most expensive films of all time.
Yeah.
And it didn't do well in America, but it's done, like it's Pirates, so it's done okay overseas.
I don't know if they'll make another one. It got...
I can't imagine
they should.
Like, it's the thing is, we're talking the other day about it getting mixed reviews, but for most part, I think people were pretty hard on it.
Yeah.
But this is the thing is that Pirates has always had pretty mixed reviews. Besides the first one, I look back at reviews for 2 and 3 that are like, oh, it's ridiculous. And I remember being, when at like 14, 15, being indignant. Because it was like, what, this review was like, oh, Pirates 2 is just very unrealistic and very not grounded in reality. I was like, it's about magical pirates. But you watch it and you go, oh, no, it actually, that
but,
makes a
but
lot of sense.
But that's also the difference between, like, you know, films like when we saw them when we were teenagers and everybody, I remember everyone at school was being like, oh, have you seen the new Pirates of the Caribbean? Have you seen the new Pirates of the Caribbean? Like, it was because it was in the zeitgeist. It was part of what was going on culturally at the time.
Jack Sparrow was the
Jack
guy.
Sparrow was the coolest thing. Nowadays, it's like, even like, you know, we're all in our mid-20s. And, you know, if we get together with friends who are like into movies and pop culture and stuff, it'll be like, oh, yeah, have you seen the new Marvel film? Or have you seen this? Or have you seen this? The stuff that is currently in the cultural sphere. Have you caught up with any of your like geek mates who have been like, oh mate, are you pumped for the new Pirates? Have you seen the new Pirates? People just don't care anymore. And yeah, I'm sure there are people
I wasn't
who go and
for
see
the
it.
Last
maybe like
one,
families who go and see it. But like, yeah, I mean, On Stranger Tides is a bit of an avatar where it managed to make heaps of money and have no cultural impact.
The weirdest thing for mine, besides all the obvious stuff too, is just before we go to dive into whatever we're going to fix this with, is Jeffrey Rush. Mm-hmm. Like, he's good. Jeffrey Rush is good. And he's a very talented man. What is happening there?
Money.
He clearly just was like, oh, this will be good for a quick buck.
I've also heard he likes working with the crew.
He does like working with the crew.
That's just a way of, you know, not straight out saying, I really love money.
I imagine that he does this and that way he can then do like 5 art house films that make no
money. Yeah, exactly.
That's it.
That's what I like to hope. But surely at some point he's gone, Barbossa wouldn't do this.
I don't think he has, though.
Everyone's phoning it in, except the kid playing Henry, who just doesn't have a character written for him.
And the girl playing whatever her name is.
She's shit.
Okay, so...
For some reason, Javier Bardem, it looks like he's having a great time.
See,
the problem is...
I forget that he's in the film. We've just had this conversation.
He's in a different movie.
Can't understand him.
So, look, I think, Carney, when you and I saw this film, we were sort of both automatically...
Just say this without me.
Are you surprised?
No.
We started like, you know, automatically maintenancing it as we went. And then we sat down the pub afterwards and we shot around a few ideas, some of which I've used in my maintenance.
Yeah.
But I think the main thing I've wanted to do is I've written something that works, I think, as both a conclusion to the original trilogy. I'm not ignoring On Stranger Tides. I'm just not addressing it.
Yeah.
Well, they don't address it. Oh, no, they do.
There's that one line about Blackbeard,
and
but otherwise.
And of course, the Pearls in the
pearl
jar.
In the jar, yeah. So I'm not really addressing it. I'm like, it could have happened if you want it to. If you don't want it to,
I forget
whatever.
How that happened, by the
but
way.
So do I. I completely forget.
What I've tried to do here is to make something that sort of wraps up the story arcs of the first three films. And I actually stick pretty closely to the beats of the film as it is. I just hopefully made it better.
Yep.
Well, the beats are okay. Beats are okay. It's the delivery, the execution, the structure,
so
the characters, literally everything around
wrapping
it.
Up some stuff. And I'm leaving a little bit of a slate for you to continue this if you really want to. Basically, some of the ideas like the Trident of Poseidon and stuff like that, I'm keeping that but doing more with it and kind of looking more at what the implications of like something that is the source of all the magic would be and things like that. But basically also kind of stripping away magic in some respects so that it's not really repetitive and kind of focusing it just back down on the characters again.
Yeah.
Sure. So I guess I'll launch in if you guys are good to go.
Bring it on. Yeah.
So I want to open the same way the film did with young Henry Turner heading out to sea and essentially drowning himself to talk to his father.
Not a bad scene.
I really like the scene.
I mean,
the dialogue wasn't amazing, but it kicked off the film with a bit of heart. It was a nice link back to the originals, set up motivations, and it gave Carney an erection. So in this, it's pretty
tick,
much...
Tick, tick, and tick.
So pretty much it'll play out, you know, more or less the same way. And, you know, in the scene, Henry Turner, like at 10 years old, you know, tells Will he wants to bring him home. And Will, who I'm going to keep as being Barnacly for reasons I'll get into later, Will's kind of a bit exasperated and just sort of tells Henry it's impossible. This is his lot now. This is his job.
Get off my boat.
His job is to ferry souls and things like that.
He's the captain now.
He's a captain. We cut to 10 years later with a close-up on the face of Henry Turner. Now, originally I was thinking, because I was like, Brenton Thwaites, I just don't, I've seen him in Gods of Egypt and now this. I'm just not really sold on him.
Oh, poor bloke.
I sort of thought.
There is two like tentpole films?
Yeah.
Poor guy.
Yeah, I know, right? We could probably keep him maybe with a better direction, better script. He can be better. Otherwise, originally I thought maybe Jack O'Connell, but then I was like, I think he might be too old and too rough. Then I was thinking Tom Holland, but then I was like, he might be too much the other way. Basically, I want someone a little bit more roguish.
Sure.
Like a little bit more convincingly roguish. I don't
like a Taron Egerton, but if he has to look a little bit more like Orlando Bloom.
Taron Egerton is actually perfect.
All right.
I want him to just be a little bit rougher. I want.
How old is Orlando Bloom, though?
Well, currently he's like 35-ish, I want to say. But
I thought he was like pushing 40.
Well, let's say, because I mean, in this, it's 20 years later anyway, so whatever.
Yeah, whatever.
Maybe let's Taron age Edgerton. Up everyone a little bit. Yeah. But Taron Egerton, because right. Like, I just, I don't, the first big thing is that I don't want Henry Turner to just be Will Turner 2.0.
Yeah.
I want to be a different character, and I want to look at like what his backgrounds and I guess what his parents did and the stories he would have grown up with, how they would actually shape someone.
If he's got any of his mother in him, he's a rebel as fuck.
Yes. Okay. So Henry Turner, you know, he's got long hair. He's wearing a bandana. The music swells. We see his determined expression. And we pull out and we see that Henry's standing on a tiny boat. It's a little bit of a reflection of Jack Sparrow's introduction, but not the same. It's not like sinking. It's a tiny boat.
That is one of the best introductions of a character in film history.
And he's wearing a sword. He's outfitted like a pirate, but it's all a little bit oversized. He just kind of looks a little bit uncomfortable in it. And then from Henry's perspective, we see the object of his chase. It's a tiny rowboat with a little old man in there frantically rowing. And Henry kind of keeps sailing. He catches up with the rowboat and he holds the man at sword point. And maybe from him, we get a few eye of asks and whatnot. Essentially, Henry's trying and failing to act like a pirate. And we maybe get a bit of funny banter. The previously scared old man kind of points out that he's just not doing a very good job at this.
You get it wrong. Aghast.
Yeah.
It's a bust.
Yeah, like not something like that. And then finally the man's kind of, all his fear sort of dissipates in the face of exasperation. And he's just like, what do you actually want? I don't have any money. And Henry says what he wants is the book. The old man's bewildered. It's just an old journal. There's nothing worthwhile in here. Henry says, treasure's in the eye of the beholder, which makes the old man laugh. He's like, you're really not very good at this, he says. But he's like, fuck it, whatever. He hands over the book. And just as that happens, they see approaching a mid-sized ship flying an English flag. And Henry sees this and just goes, oh, no. We cut to a large ship flying a pirate flag. It cuts through the waters and it's chased by three bigger ships, all flying familiar flags, the East India Trading Company. And these ships are much faster than the pirate ship. They gain. In comparison, the pirate ship seems kind of pathetic. And as they gain, they open fire from their cannons. And it is brutal. The pirate ship is literally torn to shreds by the superior firepower of the attackers. On the decks of the East India Trading Company ships, we see stern British soldiers. They're nodding to themselves. They're satisfied. And then, from all around them, from all directions, appear more ships. Huge pirate ships, proudly waving their skull and crossbones flags. And on the largest ship, a pirate stands at the prow, Barbossa. He watches the East India Trading Company ships without expression. Then he raises his hands, and from all directions, the cannons start firing, obliterating the three East India Trading Company ships.
How did he become the king of the sea, by the way?
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm going to get into that a bit.
All right. But in the film.
Yeah, I don't know. So we maybe get like a brief scene of Barbossa on the ship. He's conferring with one of his lieutenants, and basically through dialogue, we get the idea they had a victory today, but these are few and far between. They lost another ship they couldn't afford. Because to them, losing one ship is a blow. Losing three ships to the enemy is just an irritation. What Barbossa needs is a weapon. Something like the Flying Dutchman. Something to wipe away the East India Trading Company forever. But see, in the intervening years between the last films and this one, it seems that the magical artifacts that once ruled the oceans are thinning out. Basically, pirates who plied their trade in magical items are losing power. So we cut to Port Royal now, and we see it's more or less as we left it, maybe a bit bigger, a little bit more civilized, and we cut to the inside of a large courthouse, where, wearing a large wig, the governor of Port Royal oversees criminal trials, stolen bread and things like that. The governor is none other than Elizabeth Swan.
Hey!
And through this little glimpse, we maybe get an idea of the older version of her character. She's tough but fair. She's compassionate to the plight of the desperate. Maybe a little bit more of a stickler for the law than we might have expected from her at this point.
Hmm.
But after a couple of simple cases, a new one comes up. A young man accused of piracy. A young man who, as he shoved into the dock, is revealed to be none other than Henry Turner. Hi, Mum, he says with a smile. And Elizabeth's reaction isn't one of anger or even sadness. She just rolls her eyes. This is not the first time this has happened. So the court is briefly adjourned. Elizabeth confronts her son. And she's pretty pissed off, but Henry just kind of shrugs it off. And she demands to know what he was doing. If he understands the trouble that he's in, if he understands the trouble that he could be putting her in. Henry points out he wouldn't be stupid enough to be a pirate anywhere else. Everyone knows that the governor of Port Royal is lenient to their kind. Then you are stupid, she says. In the last 20 years, after the Big Pirate Rebellion, the East India Trading Company has only become more dangerous and powerful. They don't make deals with pirates anymore. They don't even trial them. They just blow them out of the water. What could possibly be worth taking that risk? And the look on his face answers her question. She softens slightly, but only slightly. Your father is bound to his fate, she says. Believe me, I looked for ways to set him free. Not hard enough, Henry snaps. The stories you used to tell me, the rumors I've heard, there is an ocean full of magic out there, and you're telling me there is nothing that can release him? That's exactly what I'm telling you, she says. Well, the legends are telling me something different. Henry holds up the book, the journal he got from the old man. The Trident of Poseidon is a myth, she says. So is Davy Jones, mother. If I can find it, I can bring our family back together. If you keep trying, Elizabeth says, you will tear our family apart.
Oh.
I can't lose you too.
More heart in 10 minutes than the whole fucking 300 of Pirates 5.
Henry just looks at her and says, I'm a man now, mother. I can make my own choices and I choose to keep looking, no matter what. Elizabeth's face hardens. Fine. You want to be treated as a man? You can be tried as one. And to Henry's shock, she proceeds to sentence him to 6 months in jail.
Ooh. Mom.
So Henry's thrown in a cell. It's probably a holding cell before he gets shipped off somewhere harder. Yeah. And he's miserable. He's a bit sorry for himself until he notices the girl in the next cell. She's probably, this is Karina Smythe, still played by K.S. Scodelario, because I think with a bit of good direction,
can
she'd be good.
Can we change her surname from Smith, Smythe? Smith.
Well, it was spelt Smythe.
But they pronounce it Smith the whole way
really
through.
Yeah, it was really weird.
So just, I know it's probably going to be Barbosa. So like, let's
don't use her. She's not Barbosa's daughter in this.
All right, so cool. Yeah. Just give her a different
Whatever.
Surname.
Karina.
Don't care
anyway,
what it
she's
is.
Just Karina. She's trying Barbosa. To work the lock, and she's ignoring, she's completely ignoring Henry. But he obviously thinks she's a bit cute. He starts talking to her, and we get a little bit of banter. And we learn through the conversation that, like in the movie, Karina, she's a scientist. She's thrown in jail for stealing supplies that she couldn't afford.
See, I like the science magic. That was nice.
That's
that was
thing
nice.
I'm going to play with. As far as Karina was concerned, she had a good reason for doing what she did. And Henry kind of chuckles. He gets that. So we get a little bit more banter, but I don't want it to be like in the film where he's just kind of totally smitten with her. I want this to be more like two equal sparring partners. They're both smart. They're both funny. And there's a little bit of fun wordplay here. And as they're talking, Henry's kind of feeling up the walls of the cell. Until he finds a loose brick, he slides it out, and behind it is a key. Karina's really stunned, but Henry just kind of offhandedly explains he always figured that sooner or later his mother would throw him in a cell. As a kid, he just had to make sure he was prepared. So
I like to imagine there's a key in every...
That's exactly it. There's a key in every cell. So he gets out the key, unlocks it, and then as he walks out, he kind of stops, turns back, and he unlocks Karina's cell as well. She's a bit taken aback. She's like, why are you letting me out? He just kind of smiles and goes, because you're pretty.
Oh, bloody Henry, thinking with his job.
There's a touch of Jack about Henry.
A little bit of Jack. So they set out, and maybe, you know, they quickly steal like a small boat. Karina heads with him because she needs to get out of Port Royal, and she figures this is as good a way as any. And Henry has a rough idea of where he's heading. So they set out and they sail. And as this plays out, maybe we get to know them a bit more. I don't really want the tortured daddy issues underpinning their characters, like in the film. I want them to be fun company, like not quite repeats of Will and Elizabeth. Henry's a little bit rough around the edges, a bit more charismatic than Will, a kid who grew up on stories of his parents' exploits and has been dreaming of going off and finding adventure and going on swashbuckling missions with Captain Jack Sparrow and all of the above his whole life. And while Karina is like doggedly obsessed with science, to the point where she doesn't really give a shit about other people, like she's just, but I want it to be kind of charming. Like maybe we get a scene of the two of them stargazing. And something that kind of links them where, you know, Henry's sort of talking about the myths of the stars and she's talking about the science behind them. And we kind of get a sense of these two kids, one with his foot in the past, the other one with a foot in the future. And that same passion that they've got for different things is kind of what brings them together.
It's a bit bloody beautiful, mate.
But of course, eventually it's a movie. Shit has to happen. So they arrive in Tortuga. They set about searching, and before too long, in a rowdy tavern, they find Mr. Gibbs. drunk of his ass, as always. Maybe we get a bit of a scene of Henry trying to remind Gibbs of who he is. He's all like, we've met, I'm Will and Elizabeth's son. And he's all like, who, what? But eventually he realizes who he is and they have a drink together. Gibbs wants to know what they're after. And Henry says, well, he never knew anyone else with such an understanding of myths and legends of the sea. And he's chasing the biggest one, the Trident of Poseidon. Gibbs kind of laughs. Even he knows that's nonsense. The idea of this one object that fuels all the magic and all the sea. But Henry persists. If he was to find it, where would it be? Gibbs explains the last he heard of the Tridents, Captain Jack Sparrow was looking for it. After the East India Trading Company tracked them down and destroyed the Black Pearl, killing most of the crew in the process.
Ooh, that's, I like that.
Jack wanted a way to save himself. Gibbs was fed up, thought that was idiocy, and so they parted ways.
It's right. A nice touch that Gibbs had had enough, because Gibbs would have enough of Depp shit. Like, Depp, I mean, Sparrow shit.
Particularly if they've lost their whole crew. Okay, Henry says, so where is Jack Sparrow now? And we cut to a bar in a small backwater town. And here, regaling the bartender with a tale of dashing rapscallionry, is Captain Jack Sparrow. A little bit older, maybe a little bit more worse for wear, but not the bumbling drunk of the film. He's still every bit Jack Sparrow. And he's telling this whole thing. Maybe he's like telling an exaggerated version of the Kraken story or something. And he's kind of relaying it with great energy and passion and excitement. And the bartender's just watching him and he just does not give a shit. Yeah, sure, you were eaten by a Kraken, you survived, but are you going to pay your tab? And Jack just keeps trying to talk his way out of it, distracting the bartender with his story. But the bartender isn't biting. And finally, the bartender just has enough and he pulls out a gun and a fight ensues. A bar fight between the two of them. And it's maybe pretty spectacular. Like, Jack might be older, but he's every bit the swashbuckling pirate hero. And after maybe a bit of a fun, bumbling fight, he defeats and humiliates the bartender. The music swells. Jack's standing on the bar. He stands up and he announces, ladies and gentlemen, you will always remember this is the day you almost made Captain Jack Sparrow pay for his drinks. And the camera pulls out and the music dies as we realize that Jack's whole show has been for a half-empty bar that just is not paying attention. Because no one cares anymore. They've just seen this shit too many times.
Like the audience.
Yeah.
Boy!
So that kind of sits there and we get the sense that maybe Jack's been in this town, in this bar for a while, just playing out this same act for a slowly diminishing audience.
Fuck, that's depressing.
And a little defeated, he kind of sits down, he tosses the bruised bartender a few coins. All the swag is just gone. He's just a sad aging man sitting in a bar trying to entertain a few drunks. He's got no ship, no crew, and more importantly, no audience. You can't be a legend if no one cares. But as Jack sits there drinking, the door to the bar opens and three people walk in. Karina, Henry, and Gibbs. Now, Henry sees Jack and he's a bit taken aback and we realize he grew up idolizing him. He heard the stories, but they never met. And here he is in the flesh. Gibbs, meanwhile, is a little bit nervous about coming face to face with the friend he essentially abandoned. But this is what they have to do. So on they go. They start talking to him, but Jack wants none of it. Gibbs tries to be all Jackie old friends, but Jack just does not care.
I like Gibbs.
I hate Gibbs.
Really?
I really hate Gibbs.
This is why
he's an exposition machine. I fucking hate him.
He's a good exposition machine, though.
Anyway, Jack just kind of brushes off all their requests for help. There's nothing in it for him, as far as he can tell, just an appointment with the canons of the East India Trading Company. And that is until Henry steps forward. You knew my parents, he says quietly. Will Turner and Elizabeth Swan. And this gives Jack pause. He looks at the youth, maybe half a young him, half a young Will, the pretty girl next to him. Maybe he sees Elizabeth there. Beside them is his old friend Gibbs, and Jack kind of looks at this scene and he's taken aback and maybe briefly he's reminded of a different scene, maybe 20 years earlier in the prime of his life and the height of his legend. A scene he's so desperate to return to. So Jack says yes. He examines the journal Henry has and he quickly surmises that the location of the Trident is here, but it's in code. They spend some time going over it together. And Karina kind of swiftly gets to work because, you know, she's no science shit. She can figure this out. She starts to decode the book.
What sort of science shit, Gabe?
But she's soon interrupted by some whispers going through the bar.
He won't answer me on the science shit, Gabe.
There have been East India Trading Company ships spotted on the horizon, heading for the town. They need to move. They set out, heading for the docks. But the moment Jack sees their pissy little boat, he's like, nah, can't be having that. A pirate needs a ship, not a dinghy. So maybe we get a bit of a fun heist scene. You know, there's a pressure of time with the East India Trading Company closing in and they're trying to steal a ship. And these characters are kind of forced to work together. Maybe they break off into pairs and Henry's paired with Jack. And maybe we see Henry being a bit giddy to be helping the Jack Sparrow with this act of piracy. Maybe he feels like he's living out one of those legends he loved as a kid. And it's kind of exciting and fun. There's a bit of heart, lots of banter. And Jack still is kind of good at this, despite being maybe a bit rusty. But of course, there's dangers. And before long, the authorities turn up. And our heroes manage to get the ship out to sea. But in the process, Gibbs is left behind. And he's set upon by guards.
Oh, Jesus.
Henry kind of shouts to save him, but Jack just keeps the ship going.
Motherfucker.
You want to kill Gibbs because you don't like Gibbs.
Just bear with me.
Okay.
We need to find the trident and save your father, right? Jack says. We can't very well do that from the wrong end of a noose. Gibbs will be fine. It's me they want. Henry kind of sees the logic in this, but it doesn't mean he likes it. So Jack takes the wheel and they sail into the night. And maybe Karina kind of pulls Henry aside and asks him about Jack. And maybe we get a bit of a rundown from Henry about Jack and the stories he's heard. Karina says she doesn't trust him, but Henry replies, Jack saved his parents' lives many times. Maybe it seems wrong, but whatever happens, Henry believes in Jack. He always had a plan. He always had a way out. If Jack says it's the right course, this is the right course. Meanwhile, Jack's standing at the wheel. He's smiling. He's happy to be at the prow of a ship again. But out on the ocean through the night, we see ships approaching from all directions. Familiar ships. Bugger, Jack mutters, as a leading ship comes close enough to reveal the grinning face of Barbossa. Meanwhile, back at the town Jack was hiding at, Gibbs is in custody. The local guards, maybe they're a bit incompetent, they're trying to interview him, and he's just refusing. And the door to the interview room bursts open and a towering figure enters. He's wearing the uniform of the East India Trading Company, but nothing about him seems to suit it. His hair is long and matted, his eyes are wild, and something about him just exudes rage. This is Captain Salazar.
Nice, nice.
Still played by Javier Bardem, but without dumb CGI effects. There's nothing supernatural about him. He's just a very good, very dangerous pirate hunter.
Cool.
Nice.
Salazar interrogates Gibbs, and we soon realize this is not a villain like any we've seen before. Salazar has no interest in playing games. When Gibbs is reluctant with his answers, Salazar just beats him. Brutally. Just taunting him about Jack abandoning him. That's your pirate code, Salazar sneers. What a thing to die for. Put it this way. He betrayed you so he could live. You betray him to do the same. An eye for an eye, it's only fair. And finally, Gibbs, bloodied and beaten, spits out. He's going for the Trident of Poseidon. Give me a location, Gibbs. Salazar says. Gibbs won't reply. Give me a location and you live. Gibbs smiles. We used to say a short life but a merry one. I figure I've long since surpassed that. Do your damn worst.
See, he's great. He's a great character. Yeah.
Salazar looks down at Gibbs, meets his smile with his own. Oh, I assure you, he says. We will. Turns to his men. Make sure he dies screaming, he says, and then stalks from the room. On Barbossa's ship, Karina and Henry have been tied to the mast. They're taunted by the pirates on board, but it seems kind of half-hearted. Like, maybe like a poor facsimile of the scene in the first film. Almost like the actual Dead Men Tell No Tales. Mm-hmm. Karina surmises that these must be the last pirates left. I mean, it's pretty well known the East India Trading Company has been merciless for years. Only by banding together under Barbossa's flag have they survived this long.
That's how he's become the king. I like it. I like it.
Meanwhile, in the captain's quarters, Barbossa sits across from Jack, who's tied to the chair.
Is his captain quarters just a normal thing? You're not yeah, that just a normal thing. It's not, skull
it's
wall?
Not dumb as fuck. It's just a normal captain quarters. Maybe slightly better off, but these guys are on the run.
Yeah.
Okay, so they're not like, they're not exuding wealth or showing anything off. They're just maybe slightly better than your average shitty pirate's quarters. They're sitting there, Barbossa sitting across from Jack, Jack's tied to the chair, Barbossa sipping his wine, but like his crew, there just isn't much sign of the gleefully evil pirate we've met before. Barbossa's drawn and he's gaunt, he's grim-faced. Maybe he tries a couple of half-hearted yaras and whatnot, but Jack quickly gathers that things just aren't the way they were. So what does Barbossa want with him? Barbossa admits that he'd heard tell that Mr. Gibbs had left Tortuga, which he figured there would only be one reason for. If Jack Sparrow was sailing again after the loss of his pearl, that means Jack has an objective, and in these troubled times, only one objective would be enough for Jack, the Trident. So what's the plan? Jack grins. Same as ever, Hector. The Trident is the most powerful object in the sea. Everything else has failed to give immortality. Maybe this will. Barbossa seems almost unimpressed. Living forever in a world that's becoming more and more dangerous for the likes of us. What, do you want to spend your eternity running? Or do you want to live it on your terms? Barbossa leans forward. The Trident is powerful, but it doesn't lift curses. It makes them. The only way young Turner sets his dear father free is by destroying it. You realize that, right? Jack says nothing. My proposal is this, Barbossa says. We work with them. We need the girl to decode the book, and she's only doing it because she's sweet on young Master Turner. We pretend we want to help them. When the time comes, we take the trident and we use it to turn back the tide of this losing battle, to make the seas our own again. Our previous alliances haven't ended so happily, Jack says. The ocean's big enough for two great captains, Barbossa replies. Just not for us and the East India Trading Company as well. Think about it, Jackie. No more running and hiding. No more fear. A new age of piracy with you and me leading the charge. Jack holds his gaze for a long time. And then he just smiles. So Henry and Karina are untied and the journey continues. Karina keeps decoding the book, but it's slow going. However, she does manage to work out one thing. In order to access the trident, they need some other bullshit artifact. Let's say a scepter. And it's something Barbossa has heard of. It's being held in an old temple on a not far off island. So they set their course. Meanwhile, in a distant prison, Captain Salazar's boat pulls into shore. This is a grim, ominous place. It might be the prison from the start of Pirates 2.
Okay. Yeah, that'd be cool.
It's huge, it's dripping, it's just disgusting. It suits Salazar to a T. Maybe he walks up the docks towards the huge doors. We get like a swell of bombastic, evil villain music. Something cool as fuck like that.
Bit of Davy Jones organ work.
Yeah. Salazar heads down to the deepest dungeons, where, in the most heavily guarded cells, a group of old men are kept captive. The Brethren Court.
Oh, nice.
So Salazar begins a bit of a villain speech. He talks about the approaching future, about mercy and vengeance and forgiveness, about how they rot here away from the seas that are their homes. But maybe they can be set free if they give up the secrets they've been holding on to. After all, these were the pirate leaders. If anyone has an idea of the location of the trident, it will be one of these. Now, here is the deal. If the location of the trident is given up, they all go free. On probation, banished to out-of-the-way towns, but free. All they need to do is tell him where to find the trident. For a moment, silence hangs in the air. And then the croaky voice of someone long silent starts singing. It's the Hoist the Colours song from the start of the third film. Oh,
fucking amazing moment, that film.
Very slowly he starts singing it, and then one by one, behind bars, the whole Brethren Court join in, just less singing it, more screaming it at him. Salazar's furious. He turns to his men. Hang them all, he spits. Wait, one of the men cries over the singing. Wait. And he gives a location. He's fast. He's desperate. The others start yelling, but it's too late. Salazar smiles. He turns to his men. I want them hung by dawn.
Oh, I knew that was coming.
Meanwhile, our heroes have arrived on the island. They make their way through the forest, the abandoned temple. They arrive, the scepter or whatever it is in the center of the temple. So maybe we get a few Indiana Jones-style traps. It's kind of fun. They're working through there. There's some booby traps, all of that. Maybe a few pirate red shirts die. Eventually they get there, they get the scepter, and Henry goes to remove it, only for Barbossa to grab his wrist. Henry tries to argue, but Barbossa insists they have to move. They have to get clear of here. Barbossa gets the scepter. They start to fight their way back through the temple, and they emerge in daylight, only to find they're not alone. The temple is surrounded by East India Trading Company men. At the foot of the stairs is Salazar. His smile is cruel. The last of the Brethren Court in one place for me, he says. Your friend Gibbs was quite the aid. Looking for the trident? You couldn't think I would allow that. Funny, Salazar, Barbossa says. You've so far failed to destroy me. I figured you're in the habit of allowing a great deal. Indeed, Salazar says. Strangle the pirates till they're forced to band together, then hit them when they're all in one place. You served your kind up to me on a silver platter. That's the thing about silver platters, Barbossa says. They're so very good at distracting from the poison they're carrying. And from behind the East India Trading Company, the gunshots and cannons start as Barbossa's men swarm from the trees. And the battle is on. With a roar, Salazar draws his sword and Barbossa engages him. They start fighting and they've backed into the temple. His men follow. Karina sees her chance. In the middle of the chaos, she uses her magnifying glass to pull some science shit and she uses the sun to set the wooden temple on fire.
What sort of science shit, Gabe?
Now, the battle is playing out in and around an inferno as the old dry temple goes up in flames.
He's not playing my game,
no,
Sean.
I'm not playing your game. So, Jack's fighting a bunch of men and he's pretty on top of it. Henry's kind of maybe just holding his own. And inside the temple, Barbossa is embroiled in his duel with Salazar. The two of them just facing off. The last great pirate and the man sworn to destroy them, playing out their duel. Barbossa's armed with a pistol as well, and he escapes into the smoke in the corridors of the temple. He uses the smoke and flames as cover to start taking out Salazar's men one by one, moving with speed that belies his age, avoiding Salazar until the blaze becomes too dangerous and he disappears into the smoke. And finally, the East India Trading Company captain, coughing and weakened, stumbles out of the temple to find himself surrounded by a slaughter. Pirates and East India Trading Company men are lying everywhere dead. But the ones still standing are the pirates. Only a small band, but they're there. And standing at the head of them are Jack and Barbossa. Barbossa steps forward. And there is no humor or delight in his victory as he just points his gun at Salazar. "You know who I am," the pirate hunter says. "Would that I didn't," Barbossa replies. "Kill me and they will come down on you with everything they have," Salazar says. "You don't have the men left to make any kind of stand. You doom your kind." "No," Barbossa says. "I avenge it." And he shoots Salazar in the head. Then the last of the pirates turn and head back to their ships. Now with only a small band left, they only need one ship. On the ship, Henry stands looking out to sea. Karina joins him. She's decoded the last of the map and she's got the coordinates. They'll be at the Trident by morning. They kind of sit there looking out to sea and Henry just says, "I thought it would be different. Going on a quest, being a pirate. I thought there'd be less blood," Karina says. Henry nods. And from behind them, Jack says, "That's the trade." They both turn to him. "Pirates want freedom," Jack says. "In a world that's less and less inclined to give it to us, we all have a choice. Bow down, accept the rules, or fight. That's the inconvenient little truth about fighting. You need someone to fight against. That comes with a cost. Your parents paid that cost. My father paid that cost. Gibbs and all the rest." "What about you?" Henry asks. Jack just kind of smiles and says, "I'm still running away from it." And so our band of heroes arrive at this little spit of land. Now, I don't want it to be the big, like, divide the seas and go underwater. It's just a little island, maybe similar to the, like, shiny diamond one they had in the film.
Yep.
But just a little spit of land, an island. They arrive there, they get off the ship, and they search until they find a distinctive wall of rock, one that has a hole in it that fits the scepter perfectly. They put it in, the wall opens up, and they enter the cave. And there on the end, on a plain rock dais, is the trident. And it's not dumb and show-offy and ridiculous like in the film. It's just a plain, simple trident. But there's something almost reverent about it, in that it's not showy. It's not trying to draw attention or be a ridiculous set piece. It just is.
Yeah.
Henry runs for it, only for somebody to step in front of him with a sword. Barbossa. "Sorry, young Turner," he says, "but I can't have the magic of the seas destroyed. I need it yet." "We had a deal," Henry spits. "Did we?" Barbossa says. "I don't recall giving my terms." "Well, they're simple. I let you live and the trident is mine." "I need to save my father," Henry says. "And I need to save my own," Barbossa replies. Henry laughs bitterly. "Your own? What is that, pirates? Your kind cause nothing but death and pain and destruction. You're not worth saving. What, you're going to take the trident and wipe out your enemies? Then what? Rule the seas with terror and violence? No one should have that kind of power." "And yet I'm going to," Barbossa says. Henry draws his sword. "You don't have an army anymore. But I have experience, boy," he growls. "You think I'll hesitate in cutting you down?" "No," a voice from behind says. "But hesitating would be in your best interest." They all turn. A man stands in the mouth of the cave. Will Turner.
Oh!
On land.
You worked out he was going to show up, didn't you?
Hmm.
Yeah.
"On land, Turner," Barbossa says. "You've wasted your one stop. And you're wasting your life if you touch my son," Will says. "Back away, Hector." "And what?" Barbossa says. "You'll destroy the trident." "No," Will replies. "You all walk away and I will move it somewhere it can't be found." "Father," Henry says. "I know, son," Will says. "But this isn't about me coming home. The Dutchman needs a captain. I need to be there to govern the seas, protect the lost souls. You take me away, the seas fall into anarchy." "They're already there," Barbossa snarls. "The East India Trading Company, times are changing, Hector," Will says. "They have been for a long time. You can change with them or you can die." Barbossa laughs. "Aye, the coward's choices. Or you can stand tall in the face of the oncoming wave and let it be known that you will not yield. Have you forgotten what we are? What we fought against? 20 years ago, we saved these seas. And 20 years later, things have changed," Will says. "Turn away, Hector. Disappear now before they find you. Pursue peace." Barbossa and Will stare at each other. Then Barbossa turns to the trident. Will draws his sword and the fight begins. Barbossa and Will duel as Barbossa's surviving men take out their own weapons. Henry and Karina are holding their own as Jack just backs into the shadows of the cave.
Very Jack. Yeah. Very Jack.
Henry screams, "Help us!" Jack looks from his fighting friends to Barbossa, to the crew, and finally to the trident. There within reach, all his dreams of living forever, free out on the ocean, all right there within his grasp. The fight spills out of the cave, and across the tiny island, our heroes do desperate battle. Will fights Barbossa as Henry and Karina struggle against the other pirates. And then Jack emerges from the cave, trident in hand. Will sees him. Their eyes meet. "Jack," Will says. Jack grins. "Pirate," he replies. Then he throws the trident in the air, draws his sword, and cuts it in half. A shockwave hits the ocean. Everything seems to shake. Will buckles. Barbossa backs away, furious, eyes on Jack Sparrow, as one by one the barnacles drop from Will. As the curse recedes and the man returns, he stares down at himself, disbelieving. On the nearby waters, the crew of the Dutchman just stare at each other, no longer disfigured monsters, but just mortal men again. The time of magic is over.
Okay.
Henry walks over to Will, but his father doesn't speak. He just closes his eyes and exhales. From a distance, Jack watches as Barbossa approaches him. "You know what you've done," he snarls. Jack just nods. For a moment, they hold. For a moment, we wonder if Barbossa's going to draw his sword again. Then the aged captain just turns away. He gestures to what's left of his crew and they head for the ship, leaving Jack, Henry, Karina, and Will. Out to sea, Barbossa stands on the prow of his ship, watching the horizon as one by one East India Trading Company ships appear. 10 of them, then 20, then 50, then 100, until the ocean's full of them. All bearing down on his lone vessel. "Ready the cannons," Barbossa snarls, as he faces down a fight he knows he cannot win.
"Ah, Barbie."
"And hoist the colors." A cry goes up. A cry that seems somewhat muted with only a few pirates remaining, but they stand tall as they sail to their deaths. Meanwhile, the Flying Dutchman makes for Port Royal. Jack Sparrow stands at the helm, watching as Will Turner comes up beside him. "I didn't want you to do that," Will says. Jack doesn't look at him. "You've done your service, William. More than enough. It's time to go home." Will looks at him, then without a word, walks over to his son. And so, on the docks at Port Royal, the Flying Dutchman finally returns to land. Elizabeth Swan stands there waiting as Will arrives, and they embrace. One by one, the crew leave, marveling at their sudden freedom, until on the boat, only Jack remains. Watching his parents, Henry smiles sadly. "That's it then," he tells Karina. "All those adventures I thought we'd have, the curses I'd break, the monsters I'd fight, all gone." "Maybe," Karina says. "Seems to me magic was always a thing of the past. There's a future out there that still needs to be found." Henry looks at her and smiles. "Besides," Karina says, "we're still fugitives, so we'd probably better get moving before your mother notices us." "Call this a suspended sentence," Elizabeth says, coming to join them, "by merit of my being wrong." And she embraces her son. And standing on the Flying Dutchman, Jack watches all of this. A family reunited, and behind him an ocean free of magic, finally being claimed by law and order in the future. He looks out to it all, and then he goes for the wheel, only to find Elizabeth standing there. For a moment, they just look at each other. "You're going back out there," she says. "It's the only place for me, love," he replies. "East India Trading Company rule the seas now," she says. "You'll never be safe." He grins. "The seas rule the seas. And besides, I've never been safe." "Change that," she says, "for now. You can always run in the morning. Seas aren't going anywhere. You've got a family down there." Jack looks at her for a moment, and then he nods. Together they walk down and join the others. As our characters walk together into Port Royal, we pull back to see the distant fiery red ocean beyond the Flying Dutchman, with the waving pirate flag in shot. It's all changed, maybe, but still full of mystery and adventure yet to come. The end.
Nah, good.
Good fix.
Good fix. I want Jack to leave that at the end.
Yeah, so do I.
I was thinking that. I was tossing it up.
I didn't really quite buy the only family comment.
Yeah, I did think about that. The only thing with that is that that's kind of the exact same as the ending of every other Pirates film.
Yeah, that's okay. That's okay. He's Han Solo.
Yeah, but I mean, even Han Solo just changes. Like,
and he does, but he's always going to fuck off.
He doesn't change permanently, but like, I would just find it really tedious if it ended with him sailing off by himself again. Like, that was the end of the original trilogy. Just like, even just a moment of him being
to me,
like,
though, that was the only thing that made sense for the story just told.
Was that he has to leave.
That he's the sad pirate who's the last one and he just leaves.
Yeah, yeah. Because then, you know, if you do another one, it's the last pirate, right? No, I'm kidding. But that's he literally would, what I imagine Jack would do is he would get in that boat. He wouldn't go raid the seas. He'd just go out to an island somewhere and just live on an island.
Yeah.
He wouldn't get off the boat. Because what had happened was she'd be like, at least stay for dinner. And he's like, oh, okay. And she gets off the boat and then he just like flicks the gangplank back
and
up.
And goes, yeah, I like that more.
And all you'd have is that, you know, you get that little underscoring of the Pirates Caribbean theme as he slowly pulls away. And
I think it was just tricky because, like, as I was putting it together, I was like, because that was the ending. I did want him sailing off by himself at the end. Then I was like, that's how every other one ended. And I was like, if there's going to be a sense of some kind of closure, I wanted just something slightly different, even if it's still implying that he's going to go off by himself and still have adventures.
He can't end on dry land. Sorry.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. I do agree with you.
Jack it's is just bring yeah. me that horizon. That's Jack
that's
Sparrow.
It. That's it.
Also. Yeah. Jack would love to go and have a meal with the family, but he can't.
Yeah, yep. That's the point. Is as much as that would actually make it even more meaningful is that he'd really want to. Mm. It's the same reason. He doesn't want to get eaten by the Kraken.
Yeah.
But he still
and
does.
It'd even be setting the table. Where's Jack? Look out the window and there's the ship
sailing.
The ship's sailing off.
Ship's gone.
Yeah, okay. Let's say that was the ending.
Because he's still got his compass. That would be it. He's still got the compass.
Yeah.
He'd just go off and find what he wants.
Yep.
Which is peace.
I think you need to destroy the Black Pearl on screen.
Yeah, me too.
I want to see Jack's face when it burns.
I don't know how you do that.
I also want to see Gibbs die on screen, and I probably want it to happen in front of Jack as well, because we talk about how Will Turner is Jack's, the closest thing to a best friend.
Well, yeah,
but Gibbs is Jack's best friend. And he needs to see him die, and there needs to be a consequence to that. It can't just be sort of, I don't like Gibbs, but you can't just throw him under the carpet. It's got to be like an actual thing.
Maybe,
and that's got to cause a conflict then with Will.
Yeah, maybe, you just have Salazar bring him to the temple. And kill him there in front of him.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
But I'd even kill him earlier.
Also, I don't want I don't think the Black Pearl gets destroyed on screen. I think the fact that it's an offhand comment communicates that time has passed.
No, but it's such an iconic thing for the...
Yeah, but what, you're going to have a flashback?
It's the first film, The Curse of the Black Pearl.
I think you need to kill it on screen.
Yeah, I think then you restructure your story and you burn it at the start of your story. Yeah, you can't destroy the Black Pearl.
You don't have it destroyed, you have it impounded, right? So Salazar's got it. Salazar's got the pearl. And he burns the pearl.
I think it's maybe.
And that introduces Salazar. Yeah, I just think
I do think too that Salazar should come in a bit earlier, and that's probably the way to do
it. Just have him burn the pearl.
Yep.
Because maybe that's it. Maybe the two of them are hunting Jack Sparrow, so they track where the pearl is, and the pearl's being burnt by Salazar. So they're like, "We'll steal the pearl for you." And he's like, "Right."
That's where he kills Gibbs. Put Gibbs on the pearl, burn him alive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's they track down Sparrow at the bar, and he's like, I've given up on the pearl because it's been impounded by Salazar. And they're like, we'll help you steal it. He's like, great, we'll steal it. And then it burns in front of him, and he's like, this is why I didn't want to go after my boat. And then he's less likely to want to help them now. He's more likely to do with Barbossa. He's more likely to follow Barbossa, and you get that, is he going to go with Barbossa or is he going to go with these guys?
Yep.
Because he's like, you can get Salazar back for burning the pearl.
Mm-hmm.
And the pearl is his life. Like,
that's why...
It'd be like killing his wife.
That's what it is for Jack. It's you've just killed his daughter.
You've John Wicked him.
Yeah.
I do think, though, that said, if the pearl is out there, the prospect of Jack sitting in a bar not trying to get it the whole time doesn't work quite as well.
Well, I think the fact is he's got no crew.
Let me make my point. Like, I think the whole thing, I know that we don't necessarily want to put too much stock in films 4 and 5, but the whole thing that underpins him in all of those films is him looking for the pearl. Yeah. Even in the fifth one, it's like, it's in the thing, I want to find a way to get it out there. In the fourth one, it's the same thing. It's like, it's in the bottle, I want to get it out there.
Yep.
So to me, it's like, if he's sitting in a bar wasting away, the pearl's got to already be gone.
Get rid of the bar then.
Because I was going
to
say,
destroy the pearl at the start of the film, and then that's not a thing anymore. That's gone, and Jack's got to do something different.
Everything else works beautifully. The Elizabeth stuff,
yep.
The Will, the Henry Turner characterization
was great.
Karina's a brilliant character. Barbossa's a better character. Salazar is such a better villain because he's just a normal person. Everything works well.
But Jack can't go on land at the end and the pearl needs to be destroyed on screen.
Yep.
That's it. There are only two fixes to your fix.
Mm. I still think it's harder to do the pearl thing than you think it is. Because only because at the same time, one of the things I was trying to do with this
is I didn't say it's easy. I just said that's what you have to do.
Hang on, let me finish. One of the things I was like trying to get at with this is that because the whole thing is like Henry, you know, is like growing up with these legends and these ideas and everything. I wanted to hold off bringing Jack Sparrow in for as long as possible. You undercut that if your prologue to the film is that.
Well, then don't make it the prologue, but just burn the pearl when you introduce Jack.
Yeah.
That's when you meet Jack. Yeah.
Then he hasn't been in the bar for years. Then it's like, what, you have a flashback. Then it's like, oh, 10 years later, here's Jack doing this.
Nah, just have it happen.
What's the flashback?
Huh?
What's the flashback?
Well, I'm just saying he wouldn't have been sitting in the bar for years if the pearl was still out
there. Forget about the bar then. I think watching a pearl burn on screen is more important than having Jack sitting in a bar for 10 years.
It's a nice scene, but
I disagree because I like the idea of him washed up.
Well, that's your idea.
He can be washed up. He's got no ship.
He can still be washed up. He's got no ship. He's been burnt. He wasn't able to get it back. Every single time the pearl's been captured or in danger, he's been able to pull through and rescue it, except for the last time when it was the most important.
Or even, mate, like, even it's as simple as he's still in the bar and he's been washed up for 10 years. And then at a later point in the film, you find out Salazar has the pearl. Jack thought he lost the pearl, and he did. But then we find out Salazar has it, and he burns Gibbs in it.
Yeah, all right, that makes sense.
Done.
Cool.
You better wrap this one up then, dude.
Okay, on that note, I've been Gabe.
I've been Handsome Tom.
I've been Carney.
And yeah, if you have any ideas about the Pirates of the Caribbean films
and how you want to burn the pearl,
hit us up at mmsandspence, our Twitter. Otherwise, movie maintenance at
sandspenceradio.com.
Otherwise, I'm at Goldbergmoser.
I'm at Awkward Treed.
I'm at Sidekick of Dowie.
And use the hashtag burn the pearl. Bye.
Thanks for listening. If you want to help support the show, why not become a member at SansPantsPlus.com and get early access to our shows, a bunch of exclusive content, and much, much more. That's SansPantsPlus.com.